I'd like to take a couple of minutes to share with the congregation kind of a picture for the arc of this year. Next door in the parish hall, the children and their teachers this morning are beginning their adventure in a year of exploring many of the colorful and strange stories of the Bible. For a long time at Theodore Parker Church, the Religious Exploration Program has worked through a three-year rotation of themes. So 1 year focusing on Unitarian Universalist principles and lore and history. 1 year encountering the religions of the world. And 1 year exploring our Judeo-Christian and biblical heritage. And so that's a rotation that has been continuing for quite some time. So this year they're undertaking this last one, in particular a journey into the stories of the Bible. So it's an exploration of what these mythic stories have to do with us today, how they connect to our UU principles, or don't, what they might reveal about being human, about being in relationship with each other, being in relationship with other living things and with the world and with nature. And then one very key element is going to be the exploration of what do these stories say about being in relationship with the great power that the Bible represents and personifies as the character of God. What is that power? It's a creative power. It's a destructive power. It's a moral power. It's an amoral power. Sometimes it guides in dreams and hunches and the small voice within. Sometimes it roars and thunders and wreaks havoc. So what is this spiritual and cosmic power that the biblical writers personify in the character of God? And how do we experience it in ourselves and in the world? Now, inevitably, this is going to be a dicey undertaking for us. Our congregation is made up of folks who have made a distinct choice to not be part of a biblically based religious community. We've chosen not to embrace the Judeo-Christian Bible as the primary authoritative text for our journey, opting for a wider search for meaning that might include the Bible, but certainly does not limit us to it. And many of us have distanced ourselves from our Christian and Jewish origins. Some of us have ambivalence about those origins, or we carry wounds from that earlier time, or anger associated with those influences. And we may remain uncomfortable with the Bible. Some of us have little or no religious background, and the Bible is a big unknown. It seems so peculiar and so archaic, it's puzzling how anyone could embrace it as a guiding text. And yet there are many reasons why pretending that the Bible does not exist, pretending that it's not relevant to our lives, why this is not really a good way to deal with our ambivalence. There are many reasons why this isn't a satisfactory answer to the biblical conundrum. So we're going to explore what some of those reasons are in a minute. But for the moment, suffice it to say that as a community, we have agreed that it's a worthy undertaking to introduce our children to the Bible, to help them to become biblically literate. We can offer them different lenses of interpretation than they might get elsewhere. One of the reasons for doing this, incidentally, is that if you don't interpret the Bible for yourself, someone else will do it for you. And we want to give our kids tools to think about these stories, to think about the teachings. We want to do that exploration in community so that they and we won't be so adrift when encountering these stories elsewhere. And also as a congregation, we have this emerging intention, at least I feel it, of trying to build stronger connections between what we call big church and little church. So that is the children's religious exploration program and what happens here in the sanctuary, so sort of adult worship. We're learning to recognize ourselves as one community, one intergenerational community, and we're engaging in a common endeavor of learning and growing together. And so here in the sanctuary, we're going to stay connected throughout the year by looking at some of the same stories that the kids are also investigating. Several times over the year, we're going to hear a story together. We'll be introduced to it together. We may play it out here in the sanctuary. And the kids will then depart and explore it in their ways, their various ways. And we'll take a look at it through the service, through the sermon, and possibly through some other forms of creative discovery. So here are a few things to keep in mind as we go forward. A few of the reasons why we ought to be doing this, why I hope we're doing this. So these considerations are not presented in order of importance. They're just things, they're lenses to look through. My personal confession is that I just think these stories are cool. You know how much I love mythology and symbol and archetypes. So like the ancient Sumerian epic of Gilgamesh, or like the Greek or Norse myths, or like the Hindu epic, the Ramayana, these stories are colorful and magical and bizarre. They're full of arresting imagery and tragic and comic drama. So I hope that you might simply just enjoy them, even just at face value, even as entertaining tales. But I also hope to impart the fascination that I feel about investigating their meaning. So I hope you'll just have fun with it. Secondly, it's about being informed. These are myths that have fundamentally shaped and informed our culture's evolution and the development of Western literature and art. Many of the stories from the Bible are shared not only by Judaism and Christianity, but also by Islam. So they're foundational for a large portion of the world's population. Third, we want to engage the stories as mythic situations that present big questions about human existence and spiritual dilemmas. As odd and ancient as they are, they can invite us into spiritual exploration. They can point to profound truths. If you remember last week, we heard a quote by Mircea Eliade, and he talks about how symbols are true because they can hold simultaneously a whole spectrum of meanings, even paradoxical meanings. Even things that don't seem to make sense with each other, and yet the symbol or the myth is a container that can hold that entire spectrum. And so in a similar way, these stories sometimes contain impossible paradoxes, and yet there they are. So we grasp them intuitively. The story opens us to a mystery. Fourth, we want to engage our critical thinking, our discernment, and sometimes our protest. So by interacting with a story, in fact, by being willing to take it seriously, we're challenged to sort out and express our own moral and theological values, perhaps in contrast to what the story presents. We don't have to assume also that because the biblical author told us something or presented something to us, that author thought it was a good thing or agreed with it. So we can engage our critical thought. We began the service this morning with a little prayer from Michael Lunig, the Australian cartoonist and poet. So his prayer gives thanks for the wonderful invention of the handle and for all the handles that allow us to take hold of things that would otherwise be very hard to grasp. And in the next breath, he reminds us to gracefully and playfully recognize how much of our experience we will never get a handle on. All those things that are ungraspable and confounding and elusive and mysterious. And this seems like a good dual reminder as we begin this venture that we need handles. In other words, we need ways of interpreting. And we're all going to bring our own handles, and we need to be aware of them. Each of us has a handle on this, as Bill Moyers pointed out, each of us has a handle on the Bible that's created out of a complex set of experiences and biases. We each bring what we were taught by our elders, our personal experiences, our convictions, our morality, our spirituality, our politics, our tastes and habits. So all of those things sort of create our approach. But we also are invited to try out various new handles, new ways of interpreting that will open new insights for us. But as Lunig points out, we need to recognize that many of the Bible's stories have outlasted as much as 800 years of interpretive wrestling, going back long before the Midrashic arguments of the ancient rabbis. It doesn't mean that these stories are just crazy and absurd, although sometimes it first appears that way, but it means that their meanings are multiple and paradoxical. They're disturbing, they leave us with a sense of puzzlement or wonderment, and that's good, that's okay. It's okay, it's good to be puzzled, to be wondering, to be disturbed, to be compelled to wrestle with something. John Burens was our former president of the UUA, and after he completed his term as president, he authored a book called Understanding the Bible, An Introduction for Skeptics, Seekers, and Religious Liberals. And he writes, "The Bible, I submit, is full of peculiar treasures for us because it's our culture's most basic religious and spiritual classic. And the very definition of a classic is a work that is not exhausted by a single reading or interpretation, much less by the simple and crude understandings we may have had of it as children, nor even by those that we came to in the process of our first critical thinking, since those are often tinged with caricature and anger and ridicule." So, of course, he's saying that a classic text of this magnitude calls for repeated engagements, repeated interpretations, and newly emerged understandings. So as we encounter these stories, we're going to let them point to things beyond our rational knowledge, things that may confound scholarly pursuit. They're stories that are much bigger and much more resilient than any dismissive skepticism or literalism that is brought to them. They're projections of our own imaginations, our human imagination, our human psychology, our struggle toward consciousness and maturity. They tell us about ourselves. They are mirrors. And so I invite you, beginning on October 16th, when we meet Noah, I invite you to venture onto this ark, this vessel of stories, and let it carry us over unfathomable waters to new and unknown places. So we're going to sing our final hymn to that great unknown, Name Unnamed. We'll sing just the first three verses.